Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life. The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, the Israel Report didn't come quickly enough for listeners. How are you?
I don't know how I can follow that, Howard. Honestly, it's going to be very, very tough indeed. But I've got this wonderful, wonderful story about something that took place yesterday and will be taking place today. We know that the IDF takes it very, very seriously, and in fact, the State of Israel in general, the responsibility to return soldiers home, whether they be alive or whether they be dead. And this is a story that has gone on since the state was actually founded, which will come to a conclusion today. And here we're talking about the IDF's first fallen paratrooper, Private Martin Davidovich. He was born in Czechoslovakia in 1927, and at the age of 16 was sent to Auschwitz, where he remained until the end of the Holocaust. He then joined the Czech Brigade, and from there, during the War of Independence during 1948, he joined an IDF paratroopers training course that was actually opened in an abandoned base in Czechoslovakia at the time. And he unfortunately went through what can only be described as a very, very extreme incident. For some reason, during an exercise, a Czech officer who was at that course claimed that he thought a gun that he was carrying was empty, and he shot Private Martin Davidovich at point-blank range the time of this course. And he was somehow secretly buried in a Czech cemetery, a Jewish Czech cemetery, without any ceremony whatsoever. That was back in 1948. In 2001, he was formally recognized as the first fallen soldier of the IDF paratroopers. And yesterday, an Israeli Air Force plane was sent to Prague to bring his remains to Israel for burial. And this was accompanied by a delegation from the IDF, including currently serving paratroop soldiers. A ceremony was held with his coffin draped with an Israeli flag at Prague Airport, on the just next to the Israeli Air Force plane that was parked there. His remains have now been brought to Israel, and today he will be buried on Har Herzl, on Mount Herzl, in the military ceremony, a military cemetery, along with a ceremony that will be attended by the Deputy Defense Minister, head of the Manpower Directorate of the IDF, and of course, will be also attended by the commander of the paratroopers, Captain Yoav Bronner, and of course, Private Davidovich's family will also be in attendance. I think it's a wonderfully poignant story.
And a
great show of how important it is to return soldiers home.
And it's one of Hakarat Hatov, of gratitude, really, of making sure that people that have done something positive are acknowledged for it.
I absolutely agree. And I mean, this is more than just doing something positive. This is somebody who volunteered at a very young age to join a course that was being conducted in Czechoslovakia at the time, to become
incredible
a paratrooper, to potentially come to the War of Independence. Who knows what he had signed himself up for at that point in time. So many other people did the same. People just signed up without having any idea of what they were committing themselves to, just in the interests of trying to pursue this dream of having an Israeli state. And we are the grateful beneficiaries of people who gave themselves in this way.
Absolutely right. A hacker group has released files that it claims were taken from Israel Ministry of Defense. That's quite serious. What is known about this group?
This is a pretty serious story, and it seems quite authentic. What we understand about this hacker group, first of all, they call themselves Moses Staff. I've no idea where this name comes from and what the significance of it is, but they have set up a website. They claim that they've hacked more than 165 servers, 254 websites, and apparently they've claimed to have compiled something like 11 terabytes of data, which includes info files relating to current Defense Minister Benny Gantz. They claim that they've been keeping an eye on him and on the IDF for many years, every movement, each step, all decisions and statements that have been taken and made. They actually leaked photographs of Benny Gantz and IDF soldiers, and they even leaked a 2010 letter that was written by Benny Gantz to the Deputy Chief of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Chief of Intelligence in the Jordanian Armed Forces. They also leaked files, which are Excel files, including names and ID numbers, email addresses, phone numbers of soldiers, of those due to sign up to the IDF in the future. So there seems to be some authenticity to all of this. And of course, it's quite strange because we know how careful the Ministry of Defense is and the IDF is about trying to maintain security of information. I know, for example, that in the army, they are so paranoid about potential hacks and about potential leakages of information that they have an entire network in the army that is entirely separated from the internet, that it has no access point at all from the internet from outside. It's entirely enclosed. There's kind of a solid wall that's built around it in order to protect it, to make sure that it doesn't have any interface points at all with public networks. And yet things like this happen. So this does seem to be a pretty serious incident. And of course, it comes on the back of some other incidents, like, for example, the hospital that was hacked recently by a cyber attack. And also, you know, there's a lot that's being said and done right now within the whole area of cybersecurity. Apparently, Israel is one of the most attacked countries from a cyber perspective in the world. There is a national cyber directorate that it claims handled more than 11,000 queries in 2020, and that was 30% up from the previous year. So there's a lot of cyber activity going on. It's not clear whether this Moses staff group is linked to some country or whether it's a group of people who've got together in order to try to make a statement or just to show weaknesses in the system. Their intentions, their motivations are currently very, very unclear. But what seems to have happened is that they seem to have somehow gained access in this way. And I suppose that there will be people scrambling within the cybersecurity directorate and within the IDF and within the Ministry of Defense today in order to try to understand exactly how this might have happened and in order to close it down. And of course, numerous Israeli cybersecurity companies will be coming forward to say, we've got exactly the solution that you need to resolve this.
Absolutely.
So this is a pretty serious incident, and it's not clear to what extent really sensitive information might have been accessed. But I guess over time, they will release things that that will, you know, if they want to really show themselves to be a serious hacker group, I'm guessing that they will release things which are very, very sensitive indeed, if indeed they have them.
Yeah, they certainly have taken on a formidable enemy in this area. That's, I kind of feel sorry for them as well in some way, because there is no ways that Israel can just stand by this and let this type of thing happen.
It will not stand by that. That is one thing for sure. And of course, we know that the moment there is this weakness demonstrated within the IDF system, within the Ministry of Defense system, it just kind of opens the door and invites others, Iran in particular, to potentially try the same. So this is going to be taken extremely seriously.
Absolutely right. Tourists are set to return to Israel starting next week. What are the rules now in terms of the return of tourists to Israel?
So this is a really exciting moment, and also somewhat concerning, because the response to the opening up of Israel's borders from the 1st of November has been very, very mixed. On the one hand, obviously, the tourism industry is very, very eager to return back to the heady days when Israel was one of the world's most favorite tourist destinations, not only for Jewish tourists, but indeed for non-Jews as well. On the other hand, there is a lot of concern that this may well undo some of the good work that's been done in order to secure Israel against the ongoing pandemic, which doesn't seem to be letting up anytime soon. So the rules are relatively simple. First of all, don't try and come here if you're not vaccinated. So it's only opening to tourists who have been fully vaccinated. In addition to that, you will need to have a test done before you get on the plane to come to Israel. And when you arrive here, you will be expected, like indeed Israelis are expected, to have a PCR test done at the airport. These days, as you land at the airport, one of the places that you need to go to immediately, having collected, passed through border control and collected your luggage, is to the testing station. There is no alternative way of going. You are forced to go and be tested right away. And in the case of tourists, people will be required to stay in quarantine until they have received a negative test from the test that they have done upon arrival in Israel. So those are the basic rules that are going to be put in place next week. The question around how this might risk Israel have centered, the issues have really centered around which vaccines are going to be recognized for tourists to come here. Now, the obvious ones, I think, are clear: Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, Sinovac and Sinopharm. Those are the official vaccines that will be recognized. In addition, it has been decided to recognize the Russian Sputnik vaccine.
Wow, that's interesting.
Which has come with a lot of controversy because this is a vaccine that does not have the stamp of approval of the World Health Organization. And this seems to be something of a diplomatic gesture that's being made to Russia. Now, it's all fine and well to try to make diplomatic gestures and to be kind and to try to engender friendship and, you know, to build relationships. But when it comes to the potential of infecting people with COVID, then I wonder whether this is a sensible thing to do. Nonetheless, this has been decided upon. So we will be expecting people who've been vaccinated with Sputnik to arrive in Israel, providing they've been through the tests and they received negative tests. But we all know that getting a false positive or a false negative is not unheard of. And so there are inevitably going to be situations where people slip through the net. And this has certainly been raised on a number of occasions by people who feel that we might be taking things just a step too far right now in opening borders to tourists, because we're just at the situation where things are really down to, down to a really, really very acceptable level. The hospitals are not overloaded. The medical system is coping. Schools are open. Workplaces are open. Gyms are open. Restaurants are open. Places of movies are open. They're even potentially planning to reduce, to take away, the current restriction of gatherings outdoors, which are currently limited to 5,000 people, up to 5,000 people. And there is talk right now of even taking that particular restriction away. So potentially we could reopen football stadiums to full crowds and things like that in the very near future. And it almost feels like we're getting back to somewhere that we haven't been in the last year or two. So the idea of tourists potentially bringing viruses in from their home countries is immensely concerning. Having said that, I think that most Israelis are looking forward to tourists returning back to Israel for sure. That would be a wonderful moment for us all.
What about children too young to vax?
I'm not sure what the current status is of children who are too young to vax. I know that up until now, where we've had a green tag restrictions put in place where we require people to be vaccinated, children have effectively been excluded. If you can't be vaxxed, don't come, even if you are not eligible to be vaxxed. So if you haven't been vaxxed, then that up until now at least has meant don't get involved, don't try and undertake those activities that require vaccination. But I'm not sure, so it's worth checking with the local embassy, with the people who make the rules up for those people who are thinking about traveling.